The Breakfast Huddle replay from Money FM 89.3.
There is a race for banks around the world when it comes to digital banking.
Yes, indeed. And Citibank is one of those banks that doesn't want to be left out by any means.
Yeah, in fact, Citibank has aggressively grown its digital presence in Singapore, and it's this digital footprint that will be a key driver of its plans to actively grow its wealth management business.
According to Citibank's new CEO, Brendan Carney, majority of Citibank's transactions are handled via its digital platform.
And he sees digital platform being key to Citibank's acquisition plans on its wealth management front.
So what other plans does Citibank have in mind on the digital banking front, and why the concentration on wealth management? What potential is there in ASEAN?
We have with us in the studio this morning Brendan Carney, CEO of Citibank Singapore Limited and Global Consumer Banking ASEAN Cluster Head. Brendan Bomjia Benvino. Hello and good morning.
Good morning.
Did he get it right?
More or less, yeah. Bom dia, bom dia. That was more Brazilian than Portuguese.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, because there is the Brazilian Portuguese and the Portuguese Portuguese. There's a very slight difference in some of the pronunciation.
The accent is incredibly different.
Yeah. And I brought that up because I figured a nice Portuguese greeting would be in order, since you've got a very interesting travel. Started out in the US, went to Portugal. I believe in the middle there was Poland, Belgium, South Korea, and now here you are in Singapore.
Yes, I've been around the world quite a bit.
Quite a bit. But let's talk about Portugal, having lived there for a while. What was it like living there? How would you rate the country in terms of livability? What's its financial sector like?
So, interesting fact. I'm an American. I think that's maybe obvious from my accent. But I started working for Citibank in Portugal. That's actually my home country for Citi. I was in Portugal for about 8 years. My kids were born there. I'm also a Portuguese citizen. And so it was a while ago. So I left Portugal in 2010. But at the time, you know, and this was sort of, you know, in the run-up to sort of post, you know, EU launch of the euro in 2001, 2002. And then the global financial crisis hit in 2008. So it's been sort of a rough road for Portugal. Mm-hmm. But now what we see in Portugal is it's a very vibrant economy. We see actually a lot of Portugal has become something of a fintech hub in Europe.
Yeah.
So companies like Google have operations in Portugal. It's got a very talented, skilled workforce. It's, frankly, don't tell anybody, but it's a paradise. It is a fantastic place to live.
Beautiful.
It's like the California of Europe, you know, very rugged coastline, nice surf.
Yeah.
If you like water sports, surfing, bodyboarding, kite surfing.
And interestingly, so breaking news in the last hour or so, Antonio Costas, his Socialist Party, have won the Portuguese election, even though they just fell short of a majority. But it's really interesting because this is a little nook at the edge of Europe where we're not talking about populism and we're not talking about the far right.
It's true. It's true. But I think, you know, that area of southern Europe, so you have, you know, you've got France, you've got Spain, you've got Portugal. I think it's sort of an island of you know, more left-leaning politics. There's a firm belief that government can still do well for people. And I think the government of Guterres has done a good job recently. And I think people are voting based on that performance. The Portuguese economy is starting to hum. You're seeing a lot of activity. You know, I go back to Lisbon, you know, once or twice a year. And I almost don't recognize it. It's growing so fast.
Yeah. And the language, you see the emergence of English. You compare 8 years ago or 9 years ago, it's come a long way.
Yeah. It has. When I first got there, you know, you could get by without Portuguese. But, you know, my wife and I learned very quickly. And it's sort of, I felt this moving around the world. You know, even as an expat, you can make do with, you know, without the local language. But when you speak the language, the whole world opens up.
Yes.
You're like just seeing the tip of the iceberg if you don't speak the language. And that's been that's why it's nice to be in Singapore where, you know, the common language is English. I feel like it gives much more accessibility to the country.
Well, how else are you going to order fish in Nazaré if you don't speak Portuguese? But another significant appointment was when you were consumer business manager for South Korea just a couple of years ago.
Tell us
a little bit about that.
I was in Korea from 2015 to beginning of this year. And, you know, Korea is it's a fascinating place. My family, we love Seoul. We were just talking. It's actually a very safe city. Other than the existential threat north of the border, you know, Seoul itself is a fantastic city, very safe. If you leave your phone, you know, in a restaurant, people will chase you and give it back to you. Yeah. I mean, there's just there's no theft. The quality of life is actually quite high. In the financial sector, I got to be there during the time when the regulator was really opening up to internet-only banks mm-hmm. or digital banks. Mm-hmm. So we got to see the launch of KBank and Kakao Bank. The reason for that in South Korea, unlike in Singapore, where I think you know, the banks have been very innovative in terms of pushing digital and fintech and alternative payment solutions. In South Korea, there was a dichotomy. There was like a really advanced personal tech. So you had, you know, Samsung.
Yeah,
you have
course.
LG. Yep. You have, you know, Kakao. You have Naver. You have Line, which is actually a Korean company. On the financial tech side, it was really, really backward. And that was largely driven by regulation. In order to open an account, you had to go to – the regulation said you had to go to the branch. To close an account, you had to go to the branch. There was all these things that were holding back financial innovation. And the regulators took the opportunity of launching – they said, we want to launch a digital bank. And then they looked at all the regulations and said, well, you know, what would prevent – what are the regulations that would prevent a digital bank from operating? Mm-hmm. Obviously, a regulation that says you have to open the account in the branch, that doesn't work for a digital bank. And so they used it as an opportunity to rewrite the entire banking, you know, regulation mm-hmm. infrastructure to allow for digital banks. And the traditional banks like Citi, we got to tap into those changes as well. You know, we've been digitizing like crazy in Korea. We've also seen a lot of some other internet-only banks like Kakao Bank. They've done very well. They have about 10 million customers in a couple years. And so it was a really exciting time to be there.
And so here you find yourself in Singapore.
Yeah.
How does it compare, particularly when you're talking about these frameworks?
Again, the biggest difference is that I think for a variety of reasons, you know, regulatory, the local incumbents, there's been a lot of financial innovation already. Whereas, you know, in South Korea, it was really – we were really sort of starting out. I think the South Koreans were looking at the Singapore model and saying, we want to do that. But they were starting a bit behind. Here, you know, even the traditional banks have become, you know, very digital, including Citi. Mm-hmm. And so I think the starting point is much, much further advanced. There's a lot of really interesting – you know, payment system solutions like FastPay, PayNow, and those are all, you know, promulgated and encouraged by the government and the regulation.
And talking about digital banking, you had an article in the Straits Times published last week. You spoke to our executive editor, Ved Srinivasan. Congratulations on that article, by the way. You talked a lot about digital banking. So where Citi is concerned, what do you have on the plate? We are at a different starting point, like you just mentioned. Mm. So how do you take it further?
Yeah, you know, I think for me, the key thing to recognize, you know, we're not being more digital because it's, you know, cool or because we want to just innovate for innovation's sake. We're trying to keep up with where our customers are going and where they are today. You know, my daughters, they went to the Shawn Mendes concert on Friday. And speaking of music, we're at the house in Portugal, and my daughter found my CD collection.
Oh, boy.
And
CDs?
CDs, yeah. Yeah, she's like, what is this? I said, this is music. And she said, explain this to me. Like, why, how is this music? And I said, well, you take this and you put it in a machine and it plays your music. And then if you have a CD, like a Sony Walkman, you can, yeah, like, go around with it. And then she's like, well, how would you get it? And I said, well, you go to a store and you would buy it and you'd bring it home.
She had a look of shock on her
face.
Yeah,
and she said, and she looked at me, and I swear, she said, didn't you have Spotify?
No.
Said, yes. So when I draw that parallel, like, when think about what's happening in banking.
Yeah.
You know, this notion that I need to go to the bank, I have to run to the bank, that just doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. And I think our children, my children, will have no concept of what it means to – of banking as a place you go. They're going to think about banking as a thing you do. And we see that every day. The number of customers coming into our branches is going down. People calling our call center going down. And people are more and more opting for the branch in their pocket, which is the mobile app. So our job actually is to keep up with that. You know, finance is a means to an end. Mm-hmm. You know, payments and loans and, you know, nobody gets excited about, you know, taking a mortgage. They get excited about buying a house. So our job is to, with technology, is to remove friction, be with customers wherever they are, be their always-on life partner, and get ourselves out of the way so that they can live their lives to their fullest.
Yeah, so Brendan, let's get into how things are changing a little bit. We had news out in the papers, the Financial Times newspaper reporting today, that HSBC reportedly is going to be looking at 10,000 job cuts. Now, this is on top of 4,700 that they'd announced previously. But when you look at some of the detail, what they're saying is that they're seeing double-digit growth in Asia. And it doesn't make sense to have a high headcount in places like Europe anymore. Plus, I would say, logically speaking, there's a big transition towards digital. And that's changing the jobs market and things on the jobs front. We talk about job losses in the banking sector, but actually, when it comes to digital, are jobs being created? Because this is a big worry.
I'm not familiar with the details of, you know, the situation of HSBC. What I can say is that we in Citi, you know, we've overinvested in Asia relative to Europe. So we have a much bigger presence in Asia than we do in Europe now. And, you know, our global consumer CEO, Stephen Bird, he calls this period we're in, like, sort of an extinction level event. You know, this is where, because consumer banking is changing so rapidly that if we don't keep up, we could, like, any bank that doesn't keep up with where consumers are and where they're going could rapidly find themselves in a crisis. Now, in Citi, you know, we believe that jobs will change. So the jobs that, you know, were in banking in the past, you know, will evolve. Now, but that doesn't mean, you know, we're not going to be a full digital bank. We still believe that there's a continuum of banking services, you know, very simple things like transfers. People are going to do those on the app. And so the jobs that are really, you know, transactional and operational in nature, those are going to change into something else. On the other side of the spectrum, there's the more complicated financial transactions where rebalancing your portfolio, thinking about, okay, what is all these volatility that we see in the markets, the, you know, U.S.-China trade tension, you know, Brexit, what does that mean for my portfolio? How do I protect my assets? How do I invest wisely? Those are transactions where you're still going to want to talk to somebody. You're going to want to get some expert advice. And so we do see that the value chain is going to migrate. So the people that we have, you know, so what I always say is, you know, we don't need branches necessarily, but we do need bankers.
Sure.
And those bankers are the bankers that we need for the future are the ones that can give advice, that can help customers understand how to use our digital better, that can really provide value-added services as opposed to performing basic transactions. We think we have a commitment to our people to bring them with us. So we've launched a program with the Institute of Banking and Finance, a professional training program called our Professional Conversion Program. We have about 400 staff that we're training now to skill them up for the jobs of the future. And so we're very focused on that.
And this really is to ensure that the employees are reskilling themselves as fast as technology evolves.
Yes, absolutely.
Because that's the problem. You're not studying, you're not changing enough, and technology is just so fast.
Yes, you know, we would much rather take our loyal employees. They know our customers. For example, we have one of our employees from our Citi phone call center, Lena Yuan. She won the Outstanding Financial Services Professional Award from the IBF at the gala just a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. A year ago, she was, you know, answering basic calls, doing transactions, telling customers what their balance is. And we put her in this training program, and now she's got digital skills that are actually better than mine. Like, she can share her screen. She can have the customer share their screen. She can help them navigate the website. And those are the kind of services that we think that our customers are going to need. You know, the biggest call center call we get right now is, I lost my access. You know, I've been locked out of my account. And really helping customers navigate through that is something that what we call a future compatible skill.
I can't remember the number of times I've had to be one of those. Let's talk about sort of some of the macro stuff that everyone in Asia is contemplating at the moment. You mentioned it yourself. We're always talking about the US-China trade talks, and we know those they're going to get underway again this week. But people are feeling the impact of it. And, you know, particularly when people like us are constantly talking about it, even in the consumer banking area, are you seeing any impact from it? And how do you navigate this sort of territory?
For me, the key word right now is volatility. And volatility, I mean, you come in one day, markets are up, come in the next day, they're down. I mean,
tell us about it.
And, you know, as a, look, I'm a banking customer myself, you know, and sometimes this roller coaster could be very, very exciting, to say the least. You know, our job in working for our customers in this kind of environment is to get into a portfolio and give them solutions that allow them to comfortably ride out this volatility. You know, we're not like a product of the month club, buy this product, it's hot right now. We believe in diversification, having, you know, a well-diversified portfolio geographically, different sectors, you know, some fixed incomes, you know, some equities. We think that's the best way to deal with volatility. And then depending on what we're seeing in the macro environment, we may tilt a little bit more towards Europe or Asia, depending on what we see in the valuations. But for us, what we try to do, you know, with our customers, we have a program we call Portfolio 360, where we look holistically and say, how should you think about your portfolio in today's environment? So we don't, you know, I don't have any, I'm not going to give a hot stock tip, tell you about a mutual fund, but for me, it's really diversification and, you know, talking to your relationship manager to understand what works for you in this context.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time, but Brendan, I wanted to highlight that you've been CEO of Citi Singapore since May. What are your long-term goals? Where do you see Citibank Singapore while you're in charge? Just to wrap things up.
Yeah, so, you know, our ambition in Singapore, it's a great franchise. You know, we've been in Singapore since 1902, serving corporate customers. And since in the 1980s, we launched our consumer bank. And, you know, our ambition is to continue to grow. We want to be more and more relevant to our customers' lives. We're going to be more digital. Our goal is to really be the always-on life partner for our customers in Singapore. And we're looking for double-digit growth across all of our products.
Brendan Carney, CEO of Citibank Singapore Limited and Global Consumer Banking ASEAN Cluster Head in the studio with us this morning. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
So nice to meet you. And it's a little bit late, but a warm, warm welcome to our little red dot.
Thank you very much.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.